thank you very much for coming to learn together. It's always nice to share the Divrei Torah. I was originally told, I don't know if this is still part of the program, that there was going to be shiurim and then menorah making. Is that that's still happening? Yeah? Okay, so I wasn't sure what topic to talk about. Obviously something Chanukah related. This is our pre-Chanukah shiur. But I was thinking that if there's going to be menorah making, then maybe we'll talk about the need for a menorah, if a person even needs to have a menorah. What do I mean by that? When I say menorah, if anyone is from Israel, what I mean is Chanukiah. So you know, I'm not talking about the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. But does a person even need one? So it sounds like a silly question. Of course, a person needs a menorah. Ner Chanukah is something that everybody is chayiv in once they are bar or bat mitzvah. Afein ha'ibosa anes, even though it's a mitzvah sasesha azman grama, it is one of the many, many exceptions, and women are every bit as obligated as men are. So what do I mean by this question, do you need a menorah? So I want to read to you a passage from the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, written by Mori Virabi Rav Shechter Shlita, of the various hanhagos of Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal. And he writes as follows. Yesh medabkim neiros Chanukah shel sha'ava l'saf ha'chalom. Some people take wax candles and they attach it to the windowsill mibli la'achnisam al tov kli, without first putting the wax candles into a menorah. V'yesh min ha'achronim shepikpiku bazeh b'savram devinan hadaka b'kli. And some of the achronim say that this is problematic because you're supposed to put the candles in a kli, and you're not putting the candles in a kli, you're just sticking it onto the windowsill. How would you do that? You'd have to like put a piece of foil on the windowsill, you know, melt the bottom and just stick it on real tight. So some achronim say it's no good, you need a kli. V'rabeinu, when Rav Shechter talks about Rabbeinu, it's Rav Soloveitchik, hikbin ma'od al elu she'eskiru deos elu. God, listen to this, it's such a strange lashon. Rav Shechter is very careful in the way he speaks to him. Hikbid ma'od, got very agitated, al elu shehizkiru deos elu, on those that mentioned such opinions. Meaning there are opinions of gedolei achronim, such as the Avnei Nezer, the Stechemet, like serious, the Maral, serious people, that say that it's very problematic not to have a menorah, to just light candles. And Rav Soloveitchik got upset when someone would mention them. Sounds a little bit strange. V'savur haya, and Rav Soloveitchik held, she'ein b'chumra zu tam klal, that this chumra has no reason, no basis whatsoever. So for those of us who had the opportunity to learn by Rav Shechter, we know exactly what he's talking about, because it sounds so strangely formulated. What he's talking about is a story that he likes to tell. Rav Shechter told us that when he was a very young Rebbe in yeshiva, many, 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 many years ago, he's been teaching in yeshiva for over 50 years, for like 53 years I think it is now. So when he was a very young Rebbe in yeshiva, so he was a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, and he started saying shir. But Rav Soloveitchik used to fly in from Boston and say shir 2 or 3 days a week in YU, and then he would go back to Boston for the weekends. So he would say shir, at the end it was 2 days, but it was 3 or 4 days usually, he would say shir in YU, and then he'd go back to Boston for the weekend. So he had this apartment in YU that they set up for him. Now it's a Sephardic-based medrash, or Beit Midrash in the Morganston dormitory, but it used to be Rav Soloveitchik's apartment. And sometimes he'd be there on Chanukah, and he didn't have a Chanukiah with him. So he had someone who helped him out, but he would take a candle sometimes and he would just stick it down on the windowsill by melting the bottom, and then he would light the candles. And one of the young men who was learning in the yeshiva, who was a student of Rav Shechter, had just attended a shiur that Rav Shechter had given, and Rav Shechter mentioned in the shiur that many achronim hold that you're not allowed to do that, that you have to have a menorah. So Rav Shechter had mentioned that in the shiur. This young man was watching Rav Soloveitchik lighting in that way, and the young man says to Rav Soloveitchik, like an idiot, he says, Rav Soloveitchik, I don't think you're allowed to do that. And he said, why would you say I'm not allowed to do that? He said, Rav Shechter said you're not allowed to do that. And Rav Soloveitchik said, tell Shechter he's crazy. So that was the Soloveitchik was a very excitable person. So that was the story that Rav Shachter told us. Rav Shachter always enjoyed telling that story because he said, I'm not crazy. I mean, it's in the Avnei Nezer, it's in the Steichemet. There are Achronim that hold this way, but Rav Soloveitchik obviously didn't hold this way. So Rav Shachter wasn't sure how to write that in Nefesh HaRav. So I guess the way he chose to write it is that Rabbeinu hikpid ma'od al elu shehizkiru deos elu. That Rav Soloveitchik would get upset at those who mentioned such an opinion. So the question is, what would such an opinion be based on? What's the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah? The Gemara is very clear. Ner Chanukah, the mitzvah is Ner Ish Ubesav. One candle for the whole household. I would say this, that if that's what you're planning on doing, leaving out the whole discussion of tonight, it seems like a horribly bad idea to light Ner Chanukah that way in term, from a fire safety perspective. Every year, unfortunately, every year without fail, there's another story of some major fire that that comes around Chanukah time, and it's pretty obvious that it's a result of Neros Chanukah. So it is a tremendously important thing to make sure that we light Neros Chanukah in a way that is extremely safe, or as safe as it possibly can be. So I strongly recommend that when you light Neros Chanukah, make sure someone stays in the room with the Neros. Over here, you probably have it set, they set up in the lobby, so you have the guards that are there all the time so they can watch them. But no one should ever abandon the Neros Chanukah. And what I mean by that is not just not to leave your home while the candles are lit. That is obvious. You should never, ever leave your home while your Neros Chanukah are lit, much more so than Neros Shabbos. Neros Chanukah are much more dangerous than Neros Shabbos, primarily because Neros Chanukah tend to be lit at the window, and windows normally have window dressing or window shades, whereas Neros Shabbos tend to be lit on a table that's really removed from anything flammable. Neros Chanukah are much more dangerous. So obviously not to leave your home, but not even to leave the room. I had a situation in my community once, a couple of years ago, this goes back, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, maybe longer. I was driving home once from a bar mitzvah, and this is the only time I ever heard North Woodmere mentioned on the radio. I turned on WCBS radio, 880, and they said, major house fire in North Woodmere. I don't know why that was on, thinking about it, do they report every house fire that occurs everywhere? That seems a little strange, but they did. They said, major house fire in North Woodmere. So as I was driving, I'm thinking, oh no, it's Chanukah. Major house fire in North Woodmere. My second thought was, oh gosh, I hope it's not my house. My third thought was, I wonder if I'm allowed to say, oh gosh, I hope it's not my house, since it's already somebody's house. So it turns out it was around the corner from me. And the house, it was a Ner Chanukah issue, and the house burnt down. Thank God the people were safe, but the house was totally destroyed. Now, were people so negligent they left their house with the candles lit? No, they were home the whole time. The candles were lit, they just weren't in the room with the candles. One of the shades that they had moved out of the way had fallen down, it caught fire, and it all happened very quickly. Thank God they just got out of the house in time. So as soon as that happened, of course, we always have to have these stories happen before we react to them. We're not proactive, but reactive. So as soon as that happened, I sent an email to my shul, please, nobody ever abandon your Neros Chanukah. Don't leave them, don't leave the room. Two days later, it was Shabbos Chanukah, a couple of days later, and then Motzai Shabbos Chanukah, I got an email from the guy in the shul, an extra neighbor actually, who said, thank you for that email on Erev Shabbos, you saved my family. So what happened? He said that every Friday night, his wife goes with the little children while he's at shul to the basement, and she reads to them on Friday night in the basement. I guess the basement is a comfortable place, probably has a comfortable couch, so she reads to them on Friday night in the basement. So she said that this fellow said that their son came home from school with his Chanukiah, with his menorah, and of course they lit it. Anyone who has a lot of small children has a very, very significant supply of poorly made menorahs. So she was going to go to the basement, but she got that email, said, you know what? Let's just stay. We'll stay here in the room with it. If the rabbi said that's what we're supposed to do. It's amazing. If everyone listened to the rabbi, just like that. But she said that we'll stay. And sure enough, this Chanukiah was made with flammable paint, They painted it with flammable paint in their infinite wisdom, and it caught fire, and the whole their house would have burnt down if she wasn't there to do something about it. So, okay, but that's a total aside. So it's a bad idea from a fire safety perspective to stick candles down on things. But what about from a halachic perspective? So if we have till close to 8 o'clock, I'm not going all the way to 8, but close to 8 o'clock, maybe we'll do halacha for a while, and then maybe at the end we'll do a little bit hashkafa. I wasn't sure whether people prefer halacha or hashkafa, so I was told halacha. So we'll start with halacha, and this will be our topic. Do you need a Chanukiah? So, as I mentioned, Rosh Hashanah said that the Avni Nezer says that you do need one. Rav Soloveitchik felt strongly that you do not need one. Why in the world would you need a Chanukiah? Why can't you just take candles and stick them on the windowsill like Rav Soloveitchik did? So it's based on a comment of the Maharal. There are really two issues over here. One issue is whether you're allowed to use wax candles at all. Are wax candles even kosher for Ner Chanukah? Then the second issue is, if you're going to say that wax candles are kosher, do you need a Chanukiah? So what's the svara? What would be the logic to say that wax candles are problematic? The Maharal Miprag, who most people don't think of as a posek, most people don't think of Maharal in Halacha Shir. I mean, if I were to tell you before the Shir started that we're going to have two sections to the Shir, we're going to have a Halacha section and we're going to have a Hashkafa section, and there will be a Maharal quoted, right? You immediately would have imagined that the Maharal would be in the Hashkafa section. And some of the great poskim on the Shulchan Aruch don't quote the Maharal in halachic contexts. Others do. And it seems that that's bikavan. Some view the Maharal as a posek. Others do not view the Maharal as a posek. But the Maharal Miprag in Sefer Ner Mitzvah, which is the Sefer on Chanukah, writes, Ulefi Hanira. He's talking about wax candles. He says, it seems to me, Shehu pasul ner Chanukah legamri, delo nikra ner kla. That wax candles are not called a ner. I should have done this better. If I was a good teacher, I would say, translate the word ner. And what would you say? Candle, right? Everyone says candle. No, says the Maharal, that's wrong. The word ner never means candle. In Shas, in Tanakh, it never means candle. What does the word ner mean? Yeah, exactly. Right, you ever go through the shuk? Shouldn't. But if you ever go through the shuk and you see the Arabs are selling for like a couple of shekel those little I don't know what to call them, meros, those little pottery things that you pour oil in it and you stick a wick in it. So that's a ner. A ner is a piece of pottery that has room for oil and a wick. That's the definition of ner. That's how it's always used in Shas. Says the Maharal, I don't know where people got this idea that a candle is a ner. It's not. So what would you call a candle? So he says, lav nerhu rak avuka. A candle is an avuka. How would you translate avuka? Torch. A candle is a torch. Vavuka near the pasul in Chanukah. He says, I haven't seen the discussion whether a torch is kosher or pasul in Chanukah. I'm going to say it's pasul. Well, there is a discussion actually in the Gemara. Valkein hainu taima, valkorcha hainu taima, Rakmadura. He says, you know why in Avuka is possible in Ner Chanukah? Because everything we do about Ner Chanukah is a zecher to the Nes. And the Nes was with a Ner. The Nes was not with an Avuka. It was not with the torch. What was the Nes with? It was with the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Not Chanukiah. The menorah. The actual menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. The menorah had Neros. It didn't have Avukos. They didn't have torches lit in the Beis HaMikdash. It was a kli that they filled with oil and they put a wick in, and that's the way it went in the Beis HaMikdash. And we are particularly sensitive to this idea that Ner Chanukah should be Dumya Dener de Mikdash. It's supposed to be similar to the way the Ner was, the menorah was in the Mikdash. And the further away we move from something that looks like the menorah in the Mikdash, the further away we move from potentially fulfilling the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Someone asked me last week, they're booked on a flight to Israel on Sunday. Sunday is the first night of Chanukah. They have to leave their house in order to make their flight. They have to leave their house at like 2 p.m., something like that, meaning way too early to light Ner Chanukah, right? So they're going to leave their house at 2 p.m. Let's say their flight is at, 5 o'clock. They're not going to get to Israel till the next morning. So they're going to miss the whole first night of Chanukah. So what's the shaila? What do I do about the first night of Chanukah? So I would normally say, whoever's home, right? The whole family. We're all going. It's for family simcha or whatever. Everybody's gone. So what do you do about, so I asked Rabbi Willard, what do you do? He said, cancel the tickets. Why would you say cancel the tickets? It sounds a little harsh. Rabbi Willard sometimes takes like very strong, a very direct, strong statement. So cancel the tickets. Why would you cancel the tickets? You're going to lose thousands and thousands of dollars if you cancel the tickets. So how much do you have to spend on Ner Chanukah? How much do you have to spend on mitzvahs in general, typically? So typically for a mitzvah, you have to spend up until 20% of your money for a mitzvah. And the vazvez, al yivazvez yosim nechodesh. If you don't spend more than 20% of your money on a mitzvah, that would be irresponsible. But up to 20, because the Gemara says, Shema Ye'ani, because you might become poor if you spend more than 20% of your money on a mitzvah. Just think about it, you do 5 mitzvahs and you're done. So you don't want to do that. So you don't spend more than 20% of your money on a mitzvah. But up until 20%, you do for a mitzvah. But Ner Chanukah is different. Ner Chanukah, you have to spend all of your money. Why do you have to spend all of your money? For the same reason that women are chayiv in Ner Chanukah. And it's a mitzvah that involves Persume Nisa. Any mitzvah that involves Persume Nisa, you'll find a couple of features for mitzvahs that involve Persume Nisa. First of all, we say Afein Hayubot Osanes. That only works on Persume Nisa mitzvahs. There are 3 of them in Shas. Afein Hayubot Osanes, because it's going to be a nes. Second of all, we say that you have to spend all your money. That if that is actually a famous shayla. What's the halacha if a person has only 1 candle and they can either use it for Neiros Shabbos or Neiros Chanukah? So what should they do? So the Gemara says Neiros Shabbos, right? Why Neiros Shabbos? What does Neiros Shabbos provide? Shabbos. Shalom Bayis. Neiros Shabbos provides Shalom Bayis. So Shalom Bayis Adif. That's more important. Shalom Bayis just means that like you could see each other and you're not going to trip on it. I don't think it means that people are going to be fighting and yelling and screaming. I think it just means like, you know, just so to have a mood in the house where you're able to function. So that's Shalom Bayis. So that's why Ner Shabbos beats Ner Chanukah. So think for a second. Ner Shabbos, you don't have to spend all your money on. Ner Chanukah, you have to spend all of your money on. Let's say you don't have any candles, but you have all your money, right? And you can buy a candle with all your money. But you can only buy one. So what should you do? If I spend all my money on one candle, I only have to do that if I'm doing it for Ner Chanukah, right? And I have to do it for Ner Chanukah. But once I have one candle, what am I supposed to use it for? Ner Shabbos. This is like one of these like never-ending, you know? So my friend Rabbi Yehuda Balzam has a list of these kinds of questions in Judaism, where you have like, where there's no end to it. You just go in Chozer Chalila. It just goes in a circle, and you have no way of resolving it. He told him you should write a book. You know, you always need a good gimmick for a book. So the last great gimmick book was the Sefer Ner Lameya, actually in Chanukah, with 100 answers to the Beis Yosef's questions of why we have 8 days of Chanukah. So then someone said that wasn't enough. So about 20 years ago, someone published a book with 500 answers. And this year, someone published a book with 1,000 answers. So it's good to have a gimmick, you know, it catches on. So I told him he should publish that in the book. But I don't know how I got here about talking about this. Yeah, so person is, I would normally say, okay, the person's flying, right? So Rabbi Willick said, cancel the plane, cancel the tickets. Why? You have to lose all your money if you're not Chanukah. So you cancel the tickets. Okay, they're not willing to do that. So the person said, can I just like light on the plane? Unwise. So he said, no, as soon as the flight attendant comes over and tells me to put it out, I'll put it out. And or maybe I won't. Maybe I'll say, you can put it out. And that way I won't be planning on lighting the candle just to put it out myself. I'll let the flight attendant put it out. So 2 problems with that. First problem with that is that it's crazy. Second problem with it is you're not yotzei the mitzvah, in my opinion. Meaning, the plane is not your house. The plane is not your place of residence. Ner ish ubeiso is the chiyuv. So it doesn't work to light on the plane. But it's also, Rav Asher Weiss has a beautiful tshuva on this topic, where Rav Asher Weiss writes that whenever you, and this is a good rule, he says, whenever you're thinking about doing something out of the ordinary, try to imagine what would happen if all the Jewish people did that. Right? So a person's going to say, oh, I'll light one candle on the plane just by my seat, and I'll be very safe about it. I'm going to take the bottle of water that they give me, and I'll get a floaty wick or something like that in the water. It's going to be very contained. It's going to be very safe, and it's just going to be me. No one else is going to do it because no one else is crazy. I'm going to be the only one that lights the Ner Chanukah. So Rav Asher Weiss says, stop, think what would happen if all the Jews did it. So you're going to be on an LL flight with 400 Jews. Now imagine if everyone tried to light an Erev Chanukah on the plane. That can't happen. That would be extremely dangerous, and therefore you can't do it either. It's like vaccination in a way, right? If everyone didn't vaccinate, well, if everyone did it, then you can't not vaccinate either. Okay. So there's a simpler answer though. Why not turn on an electric, to bring a flashlight and light a flashlight on the plane? And shouldn't that work? As long as you find an old flashlight with an incandescent bulb, which has a din of age, they don't sell them anymore. All the flashlights are LED bulbs now. You find like a, you know, a flashlight from like the 1980s or something that has an incandescent bulb, and just turn that on there. I'm sure you can get it on Amazon. You can get anything. And so turn, or eBay or something. So turn that on. So why doesn't, so maybe you should. Some posts can say, yeah, it's exactly what you should do. I would say it's a waste of time because it's not your house anyway, you're not Yotzei Narchanuk anyway. Rav Schechter said, and anyway, Rav Schechter said, you would never be allowed to make a bracha on that. Why would you not be allowed to make a bracha on that? So a number of the posts can point out, it's not Domi Diner D'Mikdash. It's not similar to the Ner D'Mikdash. And for Ner Chanukah, you need something that's similar to the Ner D'Mikdash. They weren't lighting flashlights. They were lighting candles. So similarly, says the Maharal, just bringing it a little bit closer to Ner of Mikdash. But he said, a wax candle is closer, it's more similar to an Ner of Mikdash than a flashlight is, but it's still not there. And therefore, says Maral, it can't be Yotzei with a wax candle. That's the Maral's opinion. And he says, what's the difference between an avuka and a Ner, between a torch, a wax candle, versus a Ner? He says, I'll tell you the difference between them. I always thought, what would you have said? Is the difference between an avuka versus a Ner? How would you be magdir exactly define the difference between avuka and ner? What would you assume? Well, let's do it this way. Yeah.
The wicks are joined.
So I would say it's based on how many wicks, right? And why do you say that? Because you learned that once in your life. In what context? Not in the context of ner Chanukah.
Havdalah.
Right? Because you need an avuka for Havdalah, so you've learned that if it has multiple wicks that are together, so then you have an avuka. But a single wick is called a ner. Says the Maral, when it comes to Ner Chanukah, no, there's a difference. There's a different distinction between them. He says, what happens? If someone knows the physics of this. This would be good. He says, when you light when you light a ner, that piece of pottery with the oil in it, and the fire is drawing the oil, right, in order to fuel the fire. It's having zero effect on the pottery, which is a critical part of the ner. The ner can't exist without the pottery, otherwise the oil would get all over the place, right? The oil wouldn't stay in one place. So it's a liquid. So you need the pottery, but it's having zero effect on the pottery. When you light a candle, the fire is having an effect on all of it, on the whole candle. It will slowly burn down, and will continue to burn down the entire candle where you'll have nothing left at the end of the day. And he says, that's the difference. And therefore, it's not sufficiently similar to the Ner of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, a wax candle is no good. That is the argument. That is the position of the Maharal. And then the Maharal says, and on top of that, you also need a kli. Meaning, aside from the fact that a wax candle is fundamentally problematic, even if you were to say a wax candle is kosher, you need to put it in a kli. So there is another sefer called Chesed Avram that is brought as a second source, like the Maral, to suggest that you need a kli. The Maral, again, on a very basic level, says the whole thing's no good because you can't have wax candles. It used to be that the Tells of Yeshiva used to send, I don't know if they still do, but every year we'd get in the mail a box of colorful candles from the Tells of Yeshiva. That was their fundraising thing. You were supposed to send back money when they sent you a box of colorful candles. So that hasn't happened in a while. But the Maral says no good. You can't have candles. Says the Chesed Avram, and it's also no good because you need to have an actual kli to hold it. Where does he get the idea you need an actual kli? So the Chesed Avram is quoted by the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer was a Chassidish Rebbe. He was the Sakachavi Rebbe, and his father-in-law was also a Chassidish Rebbe. His father-in-law was known as the Kutzker. So the Avnei Nezer was a super duper genius. When he was a young boy, he was already giving Gemara Shirim in the community when he was like 7 or 8 years old. So I know they say that in every art school biography about every rabbi, but it's like true about like 2 or 3 of them. So like the Avnei Nezer and the Vilna Gaon, it's actually true about. So the Avnei Nezer was this incredible genius. He got married, I think, when he was 13 to the Katzker's daughter, and he was obviously handpicked as this this tremendous Eloi. And the Avnei Nezer writes that in the Sefer Chesed Avram, he lists 15 types of candles, 15 types of menorahs that you can use for Ner Chanukah, from best to worst. Like, he starts with gold. If you have a gold menorah, that's the most muhuda, that's the most beautiful. Below that, silver. Below that, copper, right? It just keeps going down. And what's at the bottom of the list? Pomegranate shell. If you eat out of a pomegranate, you use the shell to hold it. So he just goes down the, but the whole list seems to work with the assumption that there needs to be some sort of clue. So therefore, says the Avnei Nezer, apparently from the Chesed Avram, it seems that you need a kli. And what defines a kli? Says the Avnei Nezer, a kli has to be something that can stand on its own, that can't tip, that wouldn't tip over. If you, right, you have this cup, you can stand up on, if it's not on a slanted surface, it can stand on its own, this can stand on its own, that's a kli. This might pose a different problem. When you buy those oils, right, most of you light oil, not candles, right? Yeah, when you buy those, my daughter was very angry at me this year because I bought her candles. I thought her menorah fit candles. She's like, how come the boys all light oil? So I'm going to go buy oil. But if you, if when you buy those oils, you notice they come in this plastic thing, and the bottom has like, you know, narrows at the bottom, right? And then it gets wider at the top. Thank you, whoever put this here. Thank you. Very, I don't know if you knew the topic, but this is fantastic. So if it narrows at the bottom, so and it's not a flat bottom. So those kalim that the oil come in, if you were to put them down like that, they tip right over, right? So that might not be a kli according to the Chesed Avraham. So that might be a problem according to that, because you need a kli and the kli needs to stand on its own. So we have essentially two problems over here. Problem number one is the Maharal says wax candles themselves are a problem. Problem number two is that you need a kli. Comes along everybody else and they say, come on, that can't really be true. The Eliyahu Rava, commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, writes, and he doesn't mince words. He says, "Ube'enai tamua lidchos minag shenagu olam l'rov b'sha'ava." You're going to reject the entire Tells of Yeshiva fundraising campaign for decades because you decided on a new chumrah that no one else ever thought of before. He says, "Come on." He says, "And I'll prove to you that you're wrong." He says, "The halacha. Where else do we have? Where else in halacha do we have the din of a torch other than Havdalah? One other place." Where there's an issue with a torch versus a candle. Shabbos. You did better. One other place where a torch is problematic and you don't need a candle. The Dikas Chametz. Right? The Dikas Chametz, you need a candle, you can't use a torch. Why can't you use a torch for the Dikas Chametz? So the Gemara gives 3 reasons. I don't remember all of them, but one of them is that you're going to be afraid to go into corners with a torch because you light your house on fire. But a candle is much safer, even safer as a flashlight. But you know, before they had flashlights, so a candle is much safer. Another reason they're coming to mind now as I'm talking, even though I forgot them. But another reason is that a torch's light tends to flicker, and if you're looking for something, you need a steady light. By the way, flashlight provides even a steadier light than a candle. And another reason is that a torch usually lights behind you. Right? If you've ever seen people walking with a torch in like a movie or something, I don't know when you would have ever seen that in real life. Maybe Tisha B'Av in camp or something. I don't know. In my shul, the first year we had Tisha B'Av, so there was a couple in the shul that goes to camp every summer, and it was their first time not in camp on Tisha B'Av. And the whole family came with flashlights. It was so cute. People don't really do that, you know, outside of camp. At least they didn't come with torches. But when you carry a torch, it lights up behind you. When you carry a candle, it lights in front of you. So when you're doing Bdikas Chametz, you want to light in front of you in order that you'll be able to see well. By the way, flashlight lights in front of you. So the flashlight would seem to be the best thing to use for Bdikas Chametz on all 3 accounts. But says the Eliyahu Rava, when it comes to Bdikas Chametz, we say that your bodeg la'or haner, not la'or avuka. Are you allowed to use a wax candle for the Bdikas Chametz? Everyone says yes. Everyone says yes. You get those things in the mail. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one who gets all these fundraising things in the mail. They send you a Batikas Chametz packet. You know, they have the feather to sweep away the chametz, because that's the most practical way to sweep away your chametz. They have the wooden spoon, which I have no idea to this day what that's for. Maybe it's for fuel when you burn it. I don't know. And they have a candle, and there's a wax candle to check for chametz with. Now they have the fancier packets. They also have 10 little pieces of chametz that, you know, so you can, for a few extra dollars, you can get 10 extra pieces of chametz in case you couldn't think of how to cut up a piece of bread into ten parts. So you have a wax candle. Everyone holds a wax candle is good enough. And the Gemara is explicit. You need a ner for b'dikas chametz. And yet everyone holds a wax candle is good enough. Says the Eli Rabba, it should be the same thing when it comes to ner Chanukah. Why might it not be the same thing when it comes to ner Chanukah? Why would there be a difference between b'dikas chametz and ner Chanukah?
Perhaps you could say that the
ner
is a means to an end.
Yeah, by b'dikas chametz, the ner is purely practical. And that's why most of you, I would imagine, when you do b'dikas chametz, no, am I the only one? Use a flashlight. I use a flashlight when I do b'dikas. I don't even light a candle when I do b'dikas chametz. So, at my parents' house, you know, I would light a candle because my mother would think I'm not religious if I didn't light a candle. But in my own house, I definitely use a flashlight because it's a practical necessity, right? That's what it's about. When it comes to Ner Chanukah, it's to commemorate a miracle. It's to commemorate the Ner of the Beis Hamikdash. So that proof of the Eli Rabba maybe is not the greatest proof. And then he says, and the other proof is when it comes to Avukala Havdalah. When it comes to Havdalah, we paskin when it comes to Havdalah, if you have a single wick candle. That is not the mitzvah of Mufkar. That is not the best way to do Abdallah if you have a single wick. Why? Because it's not an avuka. What is it? It's a ner. So says the Eli Rabba. I don't know why the Maral thinks that it's a problem to use a wax candle. Comes along the Aruch HaShulchan and he says, I agree that a wax candle should be perfectly kosher. And he says, not only that, he says, what happens if you do the following? Let's say I forget to buy my daughter the oil that she wants for her menorah. So it's the first night of Hanukkah, and I totally forgot. You know, all of her brothers have oil, and poor Chani doesn't have oil, and she's gonna want oil. Now, obviously, if her brothers were normal, they would say, okay, I have enough for the next several days. You know, like, we'll buy you a pack of oil sometime in the next few days. You only need one of my, I'll give you one of my oils, right? That would never happen in my house. It would never, ever happen. They're not offering anything. So she's going to be stuck with her candle. So let's say she puts her candle in her chanukia, in her menorah, and she's ready to light. And then as she's about to light, I come running in. Don't worry, honey, I would never let you down, and I have the oil for her. If you knew, our family would be much funnier. But I bring her the oil last minute. But she already set up the chanukiah, and she already started saying a bracha. So should we swap out the oil for the, meaning the candles for the oil? So says the Aruch HaShulchan, no, you've already made those candles of mitzvah. And therefore, you can't swap it out because that's a bizayon to the mitzvah. You know, like the mevazeh is something that you've already designated as mitzvah. He says, I'm not even sure, even if you didn't start saying the bracha, but you set it up. Just setting it up in your menorah might be enough to already say, you know what, this is going to be my mitzvah. And therefore, you're not allowed to be mevazeh the mitzvah. You're not allowed to denigrate the mitzvah. You're not allowed to switch it out. And then at the end, the Aruch HaShulchan says, Bar'isi Misha Kasav, and I saw someone that writes, Diner Shava Domala Avuka, that a wax candle is similar to a torch, Ve'in Mevarchan Alav Ner Chanukah. And you can't say Ner Chanukah on it, you can't say a bracha on it. And he quotes Maral Miprag. And then he says, Ve'eini Yodea Eza Avuka Yesh Bazeh. He says, I don't know what kind of Avuka he's talking about because it is not at all an Avuka. So what we need, whenever you have a sugya like this, whenever you have a discussion of halacha like this, the thing we need to look for is proof. Meaning, the burden of proof to say that it's possible, you're gonna have to find something that actually tells me that it's possible. So there are a couple of proofs. I don't want to get super technical over here. Maybe we'll do one of the proofs before we move into Hashkafa. We'll do one of the proofs and wrap it up before we move into the Sam Hashkafa. There's a Gemara Maseches Yuma The Gemara Maseches Yoma talks about who is allowed to do avoda in the Beis Hamikdash. So the Gemara says that a zar, someone who's not a kohen, is not allowed to do avoda in the Beis Hamikdash. Not only is he not allowed to do avoda in the Beis Hamikdash, if he does any of the dalet avodos, the four primary avodos in the Beis Hamikdash, anyone know what they are? Yeah, what? What is it? Zrika, right? Kabbalah? Well, we should start with that. Shechita, Kabbalah, Halacha, Zrika. Right. So if you do any of the avodos, or Haktara, Nisach HaMayim, Nisach HaYayim, any of these things, so a person, a Zar is going to be Chayiv Nisa. Shechita, Zar can do. Shechita is Kesher of Zar. But the other avodos, he's not allowed to do. And the Gemara says, another thing a Zar is not allowed to do is he's not allowed to, something that a Zar is allowed to do, is, or he's not going to be Chayiv Misa for doing, is Trumas Hadashen. What's Trumas Hadashen? Trumas Hadashen is they would clean out the ashes from yesterday's Avoda. So that a Zar is not going to be Chayiv Misa for, because a Zar is only Chayiv Misa if he does Avodas Matana, not Avodas Siluk. If he does something positive, not if he removes something. Also not Kabbalah v'Halacha, Shechita Kabbalah v'Halacha, because Yesh Achareha Avoda. A Zar is only Chayiv Misa if he does an Avoda, that's the final step. But anything that there's another step after that, he's not going to be Chayiv Misa for. So he's Chayiv Misa for Zrika, because that's the final step. He's Chayiv Misa for Akhtara, because that's the final step for burning the parts after you burn them on the day. For Nisach HaMayim, Nisach HaYayim, but not for Zrika, not for Kabbalah, for catching the blood, because there's another step after that to walk into the Mizbech. Not for walking into the Mizbech, because there's another step after that to sprinkle it on the Mizbech. Anything that's Yesh Achareha Avoda. Okay, so stick with me for a second. So the Gemara then asks, what about setting up the menorah? If a non-Kohen sets up the menorah, he chayiv misa. So the Gemara says, Nesina sapsila comes after setting up the menorah. You're going to set up the menorah, but then you got to put a wick in afterwards, so it's not the last avoda. Okay, so maybe putting the wick in. Maybe the Zar should be chayiv misa for putting the wick in. Gemara says, no, because after you put the wick in, you put the shemen in. So there's another avoda after that. So the Gemara says, okay, so maybe you should be chayiv misa if you put the shemen in. Gemara says, no, there's something that comes after putting the shemen in. What comes after putting the shemen? Lighting the hadlaka, so you're not chay. So maybe if you chay misa for the hadlaka, so the Gemara says no hadlaka lav avodahi. That hadlaka is not considered an avoda. Why does the Gemara though consider the seder es haminorah to be an avoda? Look at all the steps the Gemara just went through: putting the menorah in its place, putting the wick in, putting the oil in. All of those are actually avodas. He's not chay misa for them because there's a step after them. But all of those three things are avodas. I would have said putting the wick in, putting the oil in. But seder as a menorah, arranging the menorah, just setting up the menorah in the right place, that's an avoda? I would have called that like a hechsher mitzvah. You know, something that you have to do. Like, you know, you want to shake lulav on Sukkot. So the buying of the lulav, that's a mitzvah? No, that's if you wanna shake lulav, you gotta have a lulav. So how do you have a lulav? You buy the lulav. Let's say I go to work in order to make money so that I can buy a lulav. So I'm going to work, that's a mitzvah? No, that's just the only way I'm gonna be able to do the mitzvah, because if I don't make money, I won't be able to buy a lulav. And if I don't have a lulav, I won't be able to shake lulav. Right? So see, there is a menorah. How's that a mitzvah? How's that a avoda? So says the Avnei Nezer, what you see from here is that whenever you light something, the kli in which you light is critical. And that's considered an actual part of the avoda. Ya'aroches aneros, the pasuk says. That means to set up not only the wick, not only the oil, but the kli that it's in. And therefore, it's the same as true by Ner Chanukah. So that's his proof. What's wrong with the proof? Meaning, why do we hold that you can use candles, and why do we hold, why did Rav Soloveitchik hold you could stick the candles down on the windowsill and still be outside? So, Rav Shmuel Vazner points out that yes, it's true, Seder HaMenorah is an avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. But clearly, we do not have all of the same requirements for Neros Chanukah that we have in the Beis HaMikdash for the menorah. Yet we try to keep things similar to the menorah as a zecher to this. It's not exactly the same though. Yeah, the Shemen Zayis that had to be used, we prefer Shemen Zayis for Neros Chanukah because it's most similar to the days. And what if you don't have Shemen Zayis or other types of oil kosher? Yeah, they're all kosher. It's a question. I wonder, like, you know, they sell the oils with like Christmas colors? I don't call it that, but, you know, holiday colors or whatever. You know, with all the different... No, you haven't seen them? You've seen them, right? No. Yeah, they sell them with. I always wonder if that's. Some might say that's a hidur. It's more beautiful. Right? What's the counter argument? It's worse, because I don't think they had that in the Beis Hamikdash. I don't know, but I would imagine not. They probably had pure oil without food coloring in the Beis Hamikdash. I don't think that's pure olive oil. Something must be added to it. I don't think they find like red olives and yellow olives and green olives. Okay, so that's what Rav points out. Maybe that's only true of the Beis Hamikdash. There are other proofs as well. But at the end of the day, the Avnei Nezer is rejected by just about everybody. But one more point as far as having a kli. So again, Soloveitchik rejected the Avnei Nezer. Happens to be the idea of having a kli is not rejected by everybody. The Maharal about using wax candles is rejected by everybody. Right? We hold that you're allowed to use wax candles. The idea that you need a kli is not rejected by everybody. There's a great Rosh Yeshiva in Philadelphia by the name of Shmuel Kamenetsky. Shmuel Kamenetsky has a sefer that he didn't write, but a Talmud of his wrote, called Kovetz Halachos. And in Kovetz Halachos, his Talmud, you know, got like every last psak from Shmuel and everything. And his Talmud writes that Shmuel says that you're not supposed to do what Soloveitchik did. That you're not supposed to. They actually need a kli for the Neres Chanukah. If you hold that you actually need a kli for the Neres Chanukah, the kli plays a role. So you understand that a nicer kli would be better, because that's the Hidur Mitzvah, and you want to be Mahadur Mitzvah. So many of you probably have in your home a nice silver menorah, right? And that's better. That's a Hidur Mitzvah. Rav Buzner is not sure if that's such a great idea. Not because silver menorah is not great. Silver menorah is great. He says, but the way that we tend to do it may not be a fulfillment of the Hidur Mitzvah. Because what do? We don't put oil in the silver menorah and then wick in that oil and light that. The silver menorah is not really the kli that we're using. What do? We take one of those prefab glasses and we put that in the silver menorah. So the real kli that you're using is the glass, it's not the silver. So he says, it's kosher, but it's not a hidur mitzvah. The hidur mitzvah is to have the silver, to have the silver be the actual lamp. You could argue in that. You could argue that hidur mitzvah is just, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder and whatever looks beautiful. And when you behold the Ner Chanukah, I mean, it looks like it's in a silver menorah, so that looks beautiful. But usually, hidur mitzvah means that the mitzvah itself is more beautiful. Like a silver esrog box, is that a hidur mitzvah? Not really, it's just, you know, a way for Jews to come up with a good bar mitzvah gift. It's not really a hidur mitzvah in the silver esrog box. Hidur mitzvah is always, the Gemara Masechet Shabbos talks about hidur mitzvah. It says, Zeh keli vandeilu, it's not the fun of the mitzvahs. You're supposed to make mitzvahs beautiful. How do you make mitzvahs beautiful? So the Gemara says you should have tzitzis, you should have beautiful tzitzis, and you should have a beautiful Sefer Torah, and a beautiful mezuzah. All of these things are, it doesn't say beautiful mezuzah case. It says beautiful mezuzah, right? It doesn't talk about external things. And it's also interesting, by the way, it doesn't say a beautiful menorah. So some think that that's a raya, that the menorah is not a critical part, like Rav Soloveitchik. Why would it not have mentioned a beautiful menorah if it were really a part of the mitzvah? Okay, so that's a little bit about the kli of the menorah. I wanted to just take the last few minutes to discuss, switch gears a little bit, and just say maybe a little bit of a Dvar Torah on Chanukah. Is there a sitter in there? And the Al Anisim that we say on Chanukah, it's interesting because it seems to be unnecessarily repetitive in the Al Anisim. Well, no, it's not going to be here. This is only Shabbos Davening. No, it will be. Shabbos Davening has Al Anisim. Shabbos Chanukah happens every year, sometimes twice. You know that story of Mrs. Greenberg's Shabbos? Have you ever heard that? There's a Rabbi Emanuel Feldman who wrote a book called The Shul Without a Clock. And the title essay of the book, he writes, growing up in Baltimore in the old days, he said that there was a lady in his shul, in his father's shul, an old lady who was totally uneducated. She was never taught anything, but she was the most religious, sincere woman that they ever met. And she would come to shul every Shabbos and read the entire siddur, like straight through. You know, Barashe Chachechem and Yalaviyavo, and she would just read the entire Siddur straight through every Shabbos with such sweetness and sincerity. And he said, growing up, when it was Shabbos Rosh Chodesh Chanukah, they used to joke that it's Mrs. Greenberg Shabbos. She's right. She's going to, because it's Al Anisim, it's Yal Viyavo, it's Ritzei, so you know, she's going to bench correctly tonight. So in the Al Anisim, we celebrate the great miracle. What was the great miracle? So we describe the war, right? We don't describe the net. We describe the war. And what do we describe? It happened. Why was it such a great miracle? Masarta giborim biyad chalashim. You let the weaklings beat those who were stronger. Virabim biyad ma'atim. And the few beat the many. Utmeim biyad tahorim. The pure beat the impure. Is that a miracle that the pure beat the weaklings beating up on a strong one? That's a miracle, right? Few beating the many. That's a miracle. Pure beating impure. Is that a miracle? Is it not possible for a person to be pure and know how to shoot a gun? Meaning, why is that a miracle? And not only that, Urishayim biyat tzadikim. The tzadikim defeated the Rishayim. Why is that a miracle? Maybe the tzadikim were stronger than the Rishayim. Vizeitim biyat oske sarasecha. And those who are engaged in Torah defeated those who are very much against Torah, the wanton sinners. I don't know the Oxford translation, but I think that's what it is. Right? So, first of all, none of those things are miraculous. Second of all, they all mean the same thing. Meaning, first we say, okay, good. The few beating the many, the weak beating the strong. I understand, those are two different things. But the good guys beating the bad guys, the good guys beating the bad guys, the good guys beating the bad guys, you can say it in as many ways as you want. It all means the same thing. It all means the same thing. So I once heard many years ago, see if I remember, that perhaps these three things are actually three totally different threats to Judaism. And when we describe Tamei and Biat Tahorim, so that's a reference to our battle with the outside world, with the non-Jewish world, with the anti-Semites, those who want to kill us, those who want to destroy us. How do I know Tamei means specifically non-Jews? Because when Yeshayahu HaNavi says, Pesach, right? He refers to Klal Yisrael as an Am Tamei, or Tamei Sfasayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, you get punished for that. Klal Yisrael can never be called Tamei. They're never allowed to be called Tamei. Tamei, that's only for other nations. It's ironic, because a non-Jew actually can't become Tamei. Right? So it's a little bit ironic. But as a nation, they can be called Tameim. We, as a nation, can't be called Tameim. Tameim Yatorah means that we've stood up to the threat of foreign ideology that comes to us from the outside. Rishayim Biyat Tzadikim, that's what comes to us from the inside. Rishayim Biyat Tzadikim is that sometimes, even amongst our own ranks, we have people who are mashpia on us, who influence us in a very negative way. And that we withstood that influence. It's so enticing. Such influence is so enticing. To withstand that influence is miraculous sometimes. How it is that a Jew can grow up in America with all of the trappings and the pleasures and the gashmis of America. I have a sister, lives in Ramat Eshkol, and you know, she chose a certain lifestyle for herself. She has 10 children, expecting the 11th, and they're soon going to move to an apartment that has more than two bedrooms. And like, how she grew up in Lawrence. Like, I don't know what you know about Lawrence, but she grew up in Lawrence. How does that happen? I'm not saying that everyone has to do that. I didn't do that. But I'm not saying that, but how does that even happen? How does the value of Torah manage to appeal to a person more than everything else? Rishon Biyat Tzadikim is a great miracle. And then, there's not only a battle within our own ranks, there's a battle within each of us. Zeidim Biyat Oskei Sarasecha. Zeidim Biyat Oskei Sarasecha sometimes means that daily battle that we each face. That sometimes, you know what Zeidim means? Zeidim doesn't just mean someone who's a Rasha. Rasha's out doing awful things. Zeidim is even more insidious, because Zeidim sometimes means, I think, that someone does averos and they don't even understand why. They can't even explain. They're into things that are the opposite of Torah, or that are not Torah, or that are foreign to Torah. And they can't, you know, they tell the mashal. I'll really wrap up here. They tell the mashal that there was a guy that was sitting on a park bench once. A guy was walking in the desert once, and he steps on something hard, and he moves some sand out of the way, and he sees that there's a vast treasure right there, and he opens it up, and it's just like bars of gold, but he can't get them out until he lifts the whole treasure chest, and he can't do it on his own, so he doesn't know what to do. So he quickly runs to town to try to find a partner who's going to help him lift it out, and then they'll split the money. It's better than not having anything, right? So he runs to town, and he sees one guy standing up against the building like this. And he says, "Sir, you're not doing anything. Come, help me. There's a massive treasure. You got to help me out." And the fellow says, "No, I'm busy." And he says, "What are you busy doing?" He says, "Well, you see this skyscraper that I'm leaning up against? If I move, it's going to fall down. I'm holding up the entire skyscraper." He's like, "Okay, this guy's an idiot." So he moves on to try to find another guy. And he goes by the beach, and there's a guy there just blowing at the ocean. And he says, "Sir, I don't know what you're doing, but there's a treasure. You can come and you can make money. Help me out here." And the fellow says, "I'm sorry, I'm busy. What are you doing?" "Well, you see those waves that keep coming? They only go back because I'm blowing them back." So he says, "Okay, that guy's crazy." So he goes to a park and he sits and he sees a fellow sitting on the park bench with a calculator and doing cheshbonos, 79,842. And he says to the guy, "Sir, there's a treasure. You can come. You'll never have to work for the rest of your life. Just come help me out." He says, "I'm sorry, I'm busy." So he says, why are you busy? What are you doing?" He says, "Don't you notice it's raining? I'm counting the raindrops." Ask Sir Frank Waxman, who's the craziest of the three? The guy blowing back the ocean, the guy holding up the skyscraper, or the guy counting the raindrops? So he says, the guy counting the raindrops is the craziest. Because the guy that's blowing back the ocean, he's crazy because he's not really blowing back the ocean, but at least lishitaso, according to what he thinks he's doing, there's value in blowing back the ocean. The guy who's holding up the skyscraper, he's crazy because he's not really holding up the skyscraper, but at least if what he thinks he's doing is valuable. The guy who's counting the raindrops? Okay, you're counting the raindrops, let's say. Why? Who cares? Why do you need to count the raindrops? That's the craziest. When the hashkafa becomes something that you couldn't even explain intelligently to somebody else. You know, imagine, if someone landed from another, from another planet or in a time machine from hundreds of years ago and saw the way that, this is just my frame of reference, I have a house full of boys, and saw the way my boys watch a football game. They would think, "Oh my God, does someone kill you if the Jets lose? And if so, why are you still alive?" But they would never be able to explain. They would never be able to explain, like, why is this important? Like, what do you get? I'm assuming they're not betting anything. What do you get if they win? What do you lose? You can't even explain a lot of the things that we get excited about. That's Zeydin Biyad Oskei Sor Secha. Oskei Sor Secha means that we light up the world with a certain sense of appreciating that which is valuable, of appreciating a sense of Avodas Hashem. And that's what Chanukah is all about. Chanukah is in all of the darkness, in all of the things where we don't see things clearly, and where we can't even explain that which excites us, the name brands and all these silly things that get us excited. We can't even explain why it's valuable, why it means something to us. And we look at the light of Chanukah, we look at the light of Torah, and that's what we celebrate. So we celebrate all three levels. The threat from the outside, the threat from within Klal Yisrael, and the threat from what we've become and the hashkafos that we have, and we reinforce the value of Ner Chanukah, the value of the Ner Mitzvah, the Torah R, as the ultimate guide throughout our lives. Thank you very much. I'm sorry for going so late.